Hello and welcome to the 14th episode of the I Brew My Own Coffee podcast, the podcast for people who care about coffee. I'm your host, Alex Carpenter, and in this week's episode, I got to talk with Steve Agos. He's the man behind KCCoffeeGeek.com. We chat a little bit about a bunch of different things in this episode, but we kind of went more into depth on a couple of posts that I found interesting on his website. One being, if you're getting new, you're new into coffee and you're looking for some entry level gear or some more experienced level gear. We talk a little bit more about his thoughts on that, and then we also talk about how altitude affects coffee and why it's supposedly better for coffee to be grown at higher altitudes and why those produce better coffees. Thanks to everybody who's reached out on Twitter and email. And like I said before, if you haven't left a rating or review on iTunes, please do that, and that'd be highly appreciated. Without further ado, let's get into the episode. Hello, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Alex. How's it going?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
For sure. Well, to start off the episode, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, my name's Steve Agos, and my coffee interests, I have a website called KC Coffee Geek, which is kccoffeegeek.com, which is mostly a review site. I've written a couple of like general information articles and things like that as well. But I'm mostly what I do on that website is do coffee reviews. Outside of coffee, I'm one of these long, seems like all of your guests are like, you know, we've got a regular 40-hour a week or whatever job, and then we're coffee geeks on the side, and that's the same for me too. So I'm actually a chiropractor and a teacher at a chiropractic college in Kansas City.
Oh, cool.
And so yeah, my job job is totally unrelated to anything that has to do with coffee, but you know, I think that seems to be a recurring theme with the interviews you've been doing.
Exactly. So. That's, I don't work in coffee at all, and we like chatting with people outside the coffee industry and hearing just how they are involved in it in some way, you know. I think that's pretty cool, and there's always some interesting stories. So where did this passion for coffee start for you then?
You know, it's funny because I remember, like, way back, my earliest coffee memory actually was, I remember going garage sailing with my mom when it would have been when we lived in Dayton, Ohio, and we moved from there when I was 5 years old. And I remember, like, being really thirsty, and she had, like, a styrofoam cup of, you know, cold, probably like Folgers or something like that. And, you know, in the 70s, you didn't have bottled water and stuff that everybody carried around with them. So she's like, well, here, you can have a sip of this. And I'm sure it was, you know, her and her friend were probably just, you know, laughing at me because they knew it was going to happen. And of course, I hated the taste, and it was cold, and it was gross and all that. But even as like a little kid, I remember like the mall had these stores in them that sold like chocolate and probably tea or something like that, but they had these big bins of coffee. And my dad's kind of like a chocolate and coffee guy himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd go to the mall with my dad, and he'd always want to go, or if we went like with as a family, he and I would always peel off and we'd go to the store. And I remember just opening these bins and like breathing in all the coffee and everything. And I remember him telling me, you know, like the darker and the more oily they got, like these beans were just like, you know, you could have drizzled like olive oil on them. That's what they looked like. And he was just like, oh, these are the really good ones. You know, the more oily, the better. And you know, and so that was my coffee education. My dad actually worked for Firestone, and we lived overseas from the time I was in seventh grade till I graduated high school. And we lived in Italy.
Oh, wow.
And so like espresso was everywhere. I mean, I was just there a few months ago, and I mean, it's still, you know, I mean, it's just, it's espresso everywhere. And it's not the greatest espresso in the world, but it's just, like, that's part of culture. And so I think that's probably where I started getting into coffee, was late high school years, and, you know, just having it around me all the time like that. And so for me, like, espresso and you know, cappuccinos and lattes and all that kind of stuff were just part of, like, normal everyday life. And so that's probably, yeah, where I really started drinking coffee. I didn't start really appreciating it, like, you know, to the degree I do now until... Oh, I've had an espresso machine about 7 years at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started roasting, you know, just with like a popper, popcorn popper. I remember Brian talking about that on one of your recent interviews. And, you know, that's how a lot of people get into it, is, you know, through the popcorn popper and you know, all that. But I would say the last 2 or 3 years, I've gotten like really into specialty coffee. and you know, getting away from the grocery store and all that kind of stuff. So yeah.
That's crazy that you actually spent, like, lived in Italy a little bit. Like, is it, do you start drinking coffee earlier there? Is it like people in high school are like drinking espresso and stuff like that? Because that's, I guess that's a little uncommon here in the States.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like they're like a latte, in Italy would be a drink for kids basically. And it's, you know, and they're usually served in like a tall glass, probably not a huge glass, but like a tall, skinny, almost like cocktail glass, you know? And, I mean, I remember like in our high school, that I went to, we had like a 10 o'clock to 10:30 break every day where you just, you know, sort of stood around and messed around. And it was just kind of a time to get up and stretch and stuff. And we had like a little, coffee shop there at the school, and like everybody would drink a latte or something like that. So it seemed pretty, pretty commonplace. I mean, you don't see like little kids sipping espresso and stuff like that. Cause you know, I mean, even a good espresso, like a little kid's not going to like it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's definitely, you know, acquired taste.
You know, for all we talk about with sweetness and fruit and all that kind of stuff in coffee, I mean, bitterness is really the, you know, I mean, the understood thing in coffee is that it's bitter, and kids hate bitter stuff for the most part. So, but yeah, you'll see, you know, you'll see younger kids drinking, you know, mostly lattes or things like that, but they're very different from like the Starbucks latte or something, you know, that we have here in the States.
Yeah. I remember just being in high school and, you know, going to like the high school football game or something like that, and just getting the cappuccino, as they would say there. And it's just pretty much all 100% sugar. And
oh yeah. Yeah.
But, since you, were in Italy and that, I mean, you obviously have grown up quite a bit, and your tastes have evolved, and the gear you have has gotten a lot more, I guess you'd say. Like, tell us a little bit about the setup you have going on at home.
Oh my gosh, we have a small kitchen, and like my wife, just every time I bring something like coffee related home, my wife just gives me this look. But currently, what I'm what I use most currently is I've got there's a company called Not Neutral that they're pretty famous for their ceramic cups. Mm-hmm. But they also make a dripper that's like a glass, double walled glass version of the Kalita Wave. Basically, mm-hmm. It's got a flat bottom with three holes in it, and I got one of those probably 3 or 4 months ago, and I really like it. You know, it's still pour over. It's not as fussy as like a V60 or a Chemex or something like that. You pretty much just, I don't know, it's really easy, and there's pretty much no way to screw it up. So it's, I really like using that. The only problem is those Kalita filters are kind of expensive, and they're not as easy to find. So it's, you know, every time I look, I'm like, oh, I'm going to find a deal one of these days, but they're still, you know, 15, 18 bucks for 100 of them, which still isn't a lot of money, but when you're cheap like me, you look at it and go, you know, I don't want to spend that much money. So
yeah, we just ran out of ours at home too as well.
yeah, I got to resupply soon. So,
I'm hoping there's like a metal type of filter. I don't know how they would do this, but some type of reusable filter as like a backup. Like we have our Chemex, we got the Able Brewing disc or whatever, cone filter. So just in case if we do run out and we're not paying attention, we always do have that backup. But we haven't had that for the Kalita yet. But
yeah, and I've got, you know, I've got French press and I've got everything. But the things I use the most, I use the Geno dripper most of the time. I've gotten a entry level Gaja espresso machine, which is great, and I've had that for almost 8 years now, and it's awesome. And then I've got, and you know, I spent like $150 on it. You know, it's a refurbished one from an online company, and it was, you know, it's great. Like the guts of those machines are all pretty much the same. So you know, the under $200 ones are pretty much, you know, more or less just as good as like the $1,000 ones they make. So
yeah, and it sounds like from what I've heard of a couple other guys who have at-home coffee or espresso machines, they just last forever, you know? It's like one-time purchase. Everybody's worried about the cost to get into this stuff. But, you know, like my Kalita Wave is going to last me for probably the rest of my life, you know? Unless, like the Chemex obviously is glass and has the possibility of breaking. But these things that are entry-level to get into the coffee, especially coffee-type stuff, you know, they do last you a long time, and it's not going to be something that you're buying year after year or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Well, they're easy to clean and stuff. I mean, that's the big problem with a lot of the, you know, regular coffee machines is this, they get you know, all that coffee oils and stuff. And with a Kalita or a Chemex or something like that, I mean, it takes 2 seconds to rinse the thing out and you know, it's good to go. So
exactly.
And then I use an AeroPress quite a bit. I was a really late adopter to the AeroPress. I probably only had mine for, you know, 2 or 3 months, but I was kind of worried that everything, I thought it was going to be like a mocha pot or something. I have bad luck with some of these like types of things, and it always seems like every cup of coffee comes out the same. So I always thought, oh, AeroPress, everything's going to taste the same, you know, whatever. And everybody always talked about how great they were, but I held off forever. And then I got one, and I really love it because it, you know, it just makes a small amount of coffee. It's super fast. So Yeah, those are really cool.
Yeah, I think most of the time I'm making coffee and it's for me and my wife in the morning, but sometimes, you know, she's off doing something. And usually if I'm making a cup for myself, I usually default to the AeroPress,
yeah,
which is usually pretty nice. So it's fun to have something different, have the options and stuff like that.
Yeah, totally.
I think one of the cool things too is like, we follow a lot of people on Instagram in the coffee industry. And one of the things like I see you use, I wouldn't say too often, but you do use the mocha pot sometimes. Do you like the flavor behind that or the process behind brewing with that? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah,
I think it's one of the cool, you know, it's been around for forever. It's just like a unique thing that, you know, you'd take out camping with you and throw on the fire or something like that. But it's often overlooked these days, I think.
Yeah, that was probably the first like real coffee thing that I got, just because it's, you know, I have a really small one and it's super easy and it's super fast and all that. And I was just buying like Illy or some other pre-ground, you know, Italian espresso coffee. And it tastes pretty good actually in that. And if you do, if you cut it with some water, it actually is really good. And you can do like Cuban coffee, which is awesome. Like, I'm not usually a big like milk and sugar person when it comes to coffee, but Cuban coffee, you basically make like a mocha pot and then you put a bunch of sugar in a cup and you just barely wet it with the coffee and then stir it like forever until it turns into like this sort of frothy paste. Huh. And then you fill the rest of the cup up and it's just like super sweet and it's just like drinking liquid sugar, which so I don't do it very often, but yeah, once in a while. So the other day I used my mocha pot and I put it on Instagram, which is probably the post you saw. I hadn't used it forever. And I was like, you know, I've got all this. I mean, I have like an obscene amount of coffee bags open right now because I'm doing all these reviews. And so I'm like, I wonder like what would happen, because I don't think I've ever used it for like a really good, you know, a legitimately good coffee. So I was like, I wonder if I could put like an Ethiopian natural in there and it actually tastes pretty good. Mm-hmm. And it does. And there's some technique to it too. Like I used to just slam the heat through it as, you know, fast as possible, thinking I was getting the pressure up, and it kind of burns it as it's going through. And I think that's why it tastes the same all the time. So the key with the mocha pot is to like, just get it going kind of slow. And then once you start getting some coffee dribbling out of the top of the thing, you want to like really regulate the heat. So you just maintain this nice, even flow instead of it having it just like blast out of there. And then right away, you like put the, when you're done brewing it, you want to get the, I don't know, dunk it in water, or like rinse the bottom of it off to cool it down so it stops brewing. And I actually tasted some nuances to it and stuff, which I never had. So
interesting.
I might start messing with that.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't use any filters or anything, so it's, you know, it's super easy and, you know,
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
I like brewing with them. It's just like the cleanup from them after coming from like a, like we said, like with the Kalita or Chemex or something where you're just able to dump it out. It's a little bit more of a chore after the fact, so it usually just sits there for a little bit actually.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You run a site called KC Coffee Geek, and there's been a couple of posts on there that I saw that I was going through that I thought would be fun just to talk a little bit about and maybe expand on what you had written there. And I think the first one would be you had it titled "Why Should I Care About Altitude," which I think not a lot of people understand. Like, truthfully, right before this interview, I read over your article and learned a little bit about why the higher altitude coffees taste better. So for the listeners, maybe expand on or even introduce them to why the altitude does matter.
Yeah, so I'm certainly not an expert on this, but the you know, I was kind of in the same boat as you were, where I'm like, oh, you know, these I mean, for me, I'm like cynical about a lot of things. So like, I'm looking at these labels and I'm like, oh, look at all this flowery language. And they talk about the altitude and the farm and who really cares about any of this stuff. And the more I get into coffee, like the more I understand that this isn't just like marketing stuff. It's actually pretty important to have on there. So I started researching, you know, just for my own edification. I'm like, why do they put altitude? Like, who really cares how high the coffee grew? And, even though I've got a lot of a science background, I just, I needed somebody else to tell me. So the research I did sort of showed that altitude does kind of matter. The higher your altitude is, the coffee's growing at, which, I mean, it can grow pretty low. I don't know what the range of coffee is, but I mean, like, for example, in Brazil, like a lot of Brazilian coffee grows at a pretty low altitude, and it gives it sort of a really soft, like, bean that doesn't have as much flavor, doesn't have as much character to it. And so what I found was that the higher your altitude, like sort of more the harsh the living environment is. And so it takes longer for the coffee to develop. And so, the coffee cherry takes longer to grow and mature and all that kind of stuff. So all that time that it's taking to grow versus the faster, lowland type coffee, it develops more sugars and other compounds and stuff that give coffee the flavor that we're looking for. And so there's that. And then there's also like higher altitudes. There's a lot more temperature variability. So it gets hot and cold, during the day and during the night. And I guess that's good for sort of like sugar development as well in coffee. So basically like the higher the altitude, kind of probably the more, I don't know if, there's a lot that happens, in processing and everything else, but in general, like the more interesting beans are going to come from higher altitudes, and they also kind of get harder to roast as well, because the beans get a lot harder and a lot more dense, and so that the roaster has to have a lot of attention and care, and like making sure the roast fully develops, and you don't just like torch the outside and the inside's kind of underdeveloped and stuff like that. So there's a lot of art that goes into the roasting at that point too.
For sure. Yeah, I really like how you put it kind of in this middle part. You said, as much as it is thought that coffee plants put more effort into growing hardy, viable offspring, I think that really kind of explains that, they have to work a little bit harder, the beans themselves, to make it through those higher altitudes,
Yeah.
So that is bringing out more of the flavors and stuff like that. So I thought that was pretty interesting and glad I read that. Because think on the bag, I want to say it's MSAL, like miles above sea level, which you would see on a bag, hopefully mostly specialty coffee. On the bag, they'll have that listed.
Yeah.
If you've ever read that.
MASL is, I think, meters above sea level.
Meters
probably.
Above.
Yeah. Yep. So,
Sure.
So you'll see, I don't know, the range of most of what I see is like 16, 18, 1900 meters, which, it's still pretty high. You're in pretty low oxygen territory up there. Mm-hmm. So, and it's hard to pick and stuff. I mean, there's a great, one of my favorite coffee roasters is Case Study Coffee Roasters in Portland, Oregon. And they have a great blog. And probably within the last couple of posts that they did, they had a cool origin trip where the owner of the company went to this farm in Colombia, and like, they have to horse in up the side of this mountain. So every morning they ride horses up the side of the mountain, they pick, and then they bring everything back down by horse, and then they process it. And, it's crazy. I mean, when you really appreciate, like, that's the thing, is now that I know like what goes into coffee, like I have, 30 bags of coffee like in my house right now, and not a single one of those beans is getting thrown in the garbage. I mean, I share it with people. I drink way too much coffee. I'll make cold coffee in huge amounts, and just to like use it all up, because it's like every single one of those beans has gone through a ton of work to get to you. So
for sure, yeah,
really makes you appreciate it.
Exactly. Yeah, this year has been a lot since doing this podcast. We've been doing a lot more research on the topic and trying to research where the coffee comes from that we're getting, and trying to just understand a little bit more, because this is about appreciating it a little bit more. And if you know where it comes from, maybe even the farmer or the the process that goes into it. You know, it does make you appreciate that coffee much more and makes you think about it before you throw it away, like you said,
Yeah, totally.
and try and find ways to brew it up as many ways as you can and see. Like, it's fun too, just getting coffees in and just putting them through the different brew methods and seeing which ones come out on top. But you said you drink a lot of coffees too. Like, I guess maybe share a couple coffees that you've been digging on lately.
I've got a ton that I have to drink. I was in Portland a couple weekends ago, and I had like 5 minutes to go see some people I know. So I got a whole ton of case study coffee and a bunch from another roaster there called Tanager, which is a guy named CJ who does an awesome job. So I'm really looking for. I've kind of been saving those coffees. I'm like, I know I'm gonna love probably every single one of these, but trying to think of some really standout ones. I did a coffee trade. We were talking to Brian, who, who's got the awesome photographs and stuff on his
Yeah,
Instagram page.
Brian Sheely.
Yeah, Sheely. So he
Yep.
was one of the people when he was talking about like all the coffee trading and stuff that he does. We did a coffee trade pretty recently, and I got a bunch of his famous little vacuum packed coffees and stuff. And
Yep.
one of the ones he sent was, I don't know how to say the name. I think it's Sunergos Coffee, which is in, I think they're in Kentucky somewhere, maybe Louisville. Sunergos, something like that. I don't know how to actually say it, but they have a Papua New Guinea. It was just called PNG Wagyi, Waghi is how they spelled it. Wagyi is the farm it came from. And that totally blew me away. Like, it was so good. Like, that was one of those ones where I opened the little vacuum pack and it was like, holy smokes, this is gonna be
Just
awesome.
blown away with a good smell.
I mean, it was like super deep, super like developed. It wasn't a dark roast necessarily, but like those coffees are really about like the base notes and stuff. So like the sugars and oh man, it was just so good. So like that totally blew me away. And now I'm on a hunt for like, oh, I've got all these bright kind of fruity Ethiopian and Kenyans, but I'm like on a sugar hunt now for all these like really sweet kind of deeper coffees. But that really stood out. And man, I mean, I pretty much like everything. I mean, there's not a whole lot. Like when you read through my reviews and stuff, I mean, I've only had a handful that I haven't, totally loved. But I'm a big sucker for like Ethiopian naturals as well. So kind of on the other end of that spectrum, there was a really like strawberry and blueberry fruity coffee that I got from Case Study out in Portland. Probably right before, well, it was in the fall, so they don't have it anymore, but it was so good. It was just like drinking strawberry milk. It was awesome. Yeah, it was so good.
That's awesome. Another post you had on your site is Making Good Coffee 101. You know, we get a lot of people who are new to coffee or just trying to start to get into it. And like you said, this post does a good job of introducing people on maybe what type of gear or stuff they should get. But
Yeah.
what would you like, if someone comes up to you and asks, you know, like, I'm new to coffee, what should I do? What should I get started with?
Yeah, that's actually why I wrote that post, because I had a friend of mine who lives in North Carolina. He said, "Yeah, I'm getting into coffee and what should I do?" So I sent him this like 20-page email, and I'm like, "I should probably just copy and paste this and basically make it a post." So it's kind of hard. Like a lot of it, I sort of broke it up in that article by like, are you trying to make a whole pot of coffee at a time? Are you trying to make, a couple cups at a time? Or are you just making a single cup? So I think a lot of it has to, you have to consider like how much coffee are people really looking to make? I mean, there's some fancy, drip pots and stuff out there for people who want to make it a pot at a time. And those are, I'm not spending $300 on a drip pot. I don't care what it does and how fancy it is. So, I put some information about that. But typically for most people, I'm going to recommend that they get like something simple, at first. So like if it's pour over, I'd probably point them toward like a Kalita Wave or the Not Neutral Geno dripper or something along those lines, because it's really easy to use. Like V60 and Chemex both have some technique, involved. And you can probably, even if you have like a simple tea kettle or something, you don't even have to have the gooseneck kettle, probably. It'd be better to have, you know, a real kettle, but you can get away with, you know, using a Kalita or something with just a regular tea kettle. So usually, you know, for pour over, I'm probably going to recommend one of the flat bottom ones, like a Kalita. And then I think the AeroPress is awesome. So if somebody's like, yeah, I only want to make, you know, a cup at a time, I think the AeroPress is super, you know, super easy to do. And even like French press too, for a lot of people, it's like, you know, it's super easy to clean up. You can make quite a bit of coffee at once. You know, it does well with like some of the darker coffees and things that a lot of newer people to coffee really like. So, you know, I usually lean toward the easy. I want to make it as easy as possible, because if it seems like, oh my God, I've got to have this and this and this and this, then people probably are just not going to do it, you know?
Exactly.
And I think for new people, it's important to, you know, timing is important, I think, for consistency. But even, you know, a lot of times I won't even time my coffee. But I think weighing everything, so knowing how much you're actually using rather than just eyeballing it. So I think it's good to get like a, you know, there's some really good scales that are only $12 or $15 on Amazon. That's what I use. And it's, you know, it's going to make sure that you're using the right amount of coffee, right amount of water. And it takes all the guesswork out of it. So, you know, I'm big on weighing stuff early on and just doing that. But the less fussy, the better, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's, we are in the end just brewing coffee, you know. It's always amazes me when people are so nervous about getting into, you know, using a Chemex or any of these types of devices, that they're just so scared that they're going to mess something up. And I mean, you're just brewing coffee here, you know, just have fun with it and, you know, try different things. I think it's almost better when you're just starting out. What I like to say is, if you're starting out, you know, mess it up sometimes, you know, you never know exactly what you're going to like. If you just stick to, you know, the general guidelines that people offer online, you might not, that might not be your cup of tea. You know, you might want something that's a little bit heavier or lighter, you know, so you're never going to find that out unless you play around with it. And sometimes it's better just not to worry about it in the beginning and just brew it, you know?
Right. Sure.
For sure. And, yeah, that's, I'll be linking up this article if anybody's interested in reading a little bit more about the stuff that Steve covers in this post. But one thing that we did pop up, we had a listener send in a question. Tim posted to us that he likes the darker roasted coffees, and he's kind of confused about why, you know, some of these specialty coffee shops aren't offering a dark roasted coffee. He specifically calls out a couple, and he ordered from them, and he got a light to medium roasted coffee, and it was just wasn't what he was used to or liked. So he's just curious why coffee shops aren't doing a dark roasted coffee like that.
Yeah, well, it gets to be kind of there's a lot of politics, I think, with the answer. So like first part of the answer is that it's just not the trend right now. And, you know, coffee is going to go up and down in different trends and stuff. So the current trend, and I think it's driven a lot by how coffee cupping works, which is like how you grade coffees based on a lot of different variables. But one of the big kind of high ticket items when you're scoring a coffee, like when you're cupping, is the acidity. And like, so that's like, and when people see acidity, they're like, oh my God, that's going to burn my stomach. And when coffee people are talking about acidity, they're talking more about the fruit flavors. And coffee, which come from various types of acid, like there's malic acid, which creates kind of apple type flavors. And there's, you know, different acids. Citric acid is going to give you, you know, orange and grapefruit and lemon and lime and, you know, stuff like that. So acidity is like one of the big high score components when you're cupping coffee. And so like, you know, there's this sort of trend of like the higher the cupping score, the better the coffee is. And that's true to a certain extent, but there's a lot of like really good coffees that score in the mid 80s when, you know, and you look at that going, oh, this only scored an 86, you know, that must suck compared to one that scored a 92. And it's just, you know, you get different points for different things. So I think the way that cupping is done is sort of driven people toward these brighter, more acidic coffees. And so, and that's definitely something that's like, you know, when we talk about coffee, we talk about second wave coffee, which would be like your Peet's and Starbucks and like the classic big frozen drink or lattes with syrup and all that kind of stuff in it. That's sort of like the second wave of coffee that sort of spread the idea of like higher quality coffee all over the country. And then, you know, the current trend is third wave coffee, which is like knowing, you know, which farm and which tree on the farm your beans came from, and like really knowing like everything there is about it. And so that third wave movement is really into like bright, acidic, kind of light coffees. And again, a lot of that's been driven by cupping and how cupping scores work and stuff like that, I think. So the trend is away from darker roast, because it's sort of like, well, you know, we don't want to be like the second wave people. We don't want to be like Starbucks and just incinerate our beans and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the downside is there's a lot of things that can happen in coffee, like toward the end of the roast. And so, you know, you can get a lot of really good flavors like chocolates and cocoa and like, you know, the deeper sugars and things like that that really happen later on in the roast. And it doesn't have to be one or the other, but I mean, typically you're either going to pull the coffee pretty early in the roast or kind of late in the roast. And so the trend is definitely, you know, going to be toward lighter roasts. And
yeah, I think a lot of what I hear and I tend to agree to with right now, but I mean, just like beer, like I go through seasons of like what types of coffees I would like, but right now, you know, I do like the lighter roasted coffees. But with the lighter roasted coffees, you can kind of get a little bit more of the natural delicate flavors that the coffee naturally would have compared to something that's roasted a little bit darker too.
Yeah, the thing about roasting is like as you get, and it's, I mean, it can be like, we're talking about the difference of a few degrees, and we're talking about the difference between like, you know, 10 to even like 30 seconds. Like, you know, that could be the different, like all make all the difference in the world in a coffee. And so, if they get roasted past a certain stage, you start to develop like some different kind of acids that really will kind of make your stomach get a little upset and will like give you some metallic type flavors and some weird stuff. And so like stuff that gets, you know, beyond a certain point, and like, it's not always a dead giveaway, but if you look at beans and they're like really oily, those are really probably like over roasted beans.
Mm-hmm.
But you can even have like a dark roasted bean that like doesn't get developed properly. So they can roast it too fast, and like the inside is sort of underdeveloped and the outside is sort of overdeveloped. And, you know, in the same respect, you can have a light roasted bean that doesn't get developed at all. And so like it might be good for a week after it's been roasted because you get all those bright acids and stuff. But then after that, it just, you know, really falls apart because it was sort of like, I've seen people like refer to it as forced acidity and things like that. So, I mean, there's a lot that happens in that roasting machine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd like that coffee I mentioned from Sunergos, that P&G Wagi, was like, you know, wasn't a dark roast by any stretch, but I mean, it was like brown sugar, molasses. It was all sweet. There's really no perceived acidity in it at all. So there's really no fruity flavors, but it was like such a good coffee that'd be the type of coffee that, like, you know, this listener would probably be interested in, because, you know, it's not the color of the beans, it's how developed the roast gets. And that was one of the most beautifully roasted coffees that I've had in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But they can be hard to find, you know. I mean, I've had a couple coffees similar to that from Colombia recently. I've been drinking a lot of Colombian coffee, and you know, some of them are really sweet and really kind of, you know, almost sugary. And but they, you know, if you look at them, you would go, oh man, that's still pretty light roast. But there was a couple. I did a review. I got some coffee. I bought some coffee at, I don't even remember when it was. It was around Thanksgiving. It was like a Black Friday deal, and I got it. There's a company called Jaguar Forest.
Mm-hmm.
And they really only do all organic coffee from Mexico and only from two regions. They don't put a whole lot of information about the farms and stuff like that. So it's almost more of like, I perceive it more as like almost like a grocery store brand that you might see in like a, you know, a nicer grocery store or something like that. There's just not a whole lot of information on the bag and stuff. So it's not the full third wave kind of thing you would think. But their medium roast, I reviewed two of their medium roast coffees, one from Oaxaca and one from Chiapas. And they were both pretty good. They were darker than what I liked. And even at, like, I wouldn't, they do a dark version, which I think would probably be too dark for a lot of people, but the listener might really like that. And they're pretty affordable. I think they're like $13 or $14 for a big bag. And that company's called Jaguar Forest. And both of those were pretty good. There was nothing really wrong with the coffee, but as you kind of go further in the roast too, sometimes it'll flatten out some of the flavors. And they were just like, you know, I mean, it was coffee, you know. There wasn't anything really interesting to it. It was like, well, okay, that's a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Great. But even in my reviews, I said, you know, for people who like darker roasts or maybe who throw like milk and sugar in their coffee or things like that, these would be really good because they're better than Starbucks or Pete's or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't like, you know, nuked beans or anything like that. They were just a little darker than what I tend to like. So,
for sure. Well, thanks for helping out with that. And
yeah.
It's been a lot of fun chatting with you and having you on the show.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, for the listeners out there, where can they follow along with what you're up to online?
I try to post for a while. I've been posting a review every day. That's slowed down a little bit because we've got some things going on in real life. But you know, I'm posting at least a couple reviews every week on my website, which is kccoffeegeek.com. So that's good to follow. I don't do a whole lot on Twitter, but I'm also KC Coffee Geek on Twitter. And then mainly I'm on Instagram because I'm a very visual person and photography is one of my sort of sidelines as well. I don't have, you know, the sort of, you know, pose shots and things that Brian does that are, you know, he puts a lot of thought and stuff into it and he's got, you know, the right equipment and stuff. A lot of mine are just right off my iPhone, but, you know, I really like Instagram for that. So most of what goes on to Twitter just dumps off my Instagram feed automatically onto there. So really Instagram, where I'm KC Coffee Geek as well. And, my website are the two ways to kind of keep track.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us and, have a good rest of the night.
All right. Thanks. You too.